Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, this is Jimmy Carboni and Beer Sessions Radio. It's September 30th, 2014. Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got some special guests in the house, so I'm kind of quaking under the talent in this room. We got Yeppe from Evil Twin, Alex from The Nomad, and Bill Kovaleski from Victory. So it's going to be a pretty great show tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. All right, so here we are, Heritage Radio Network. It's almost October, and we sat on a very cool tasting yesterday at the Nomad restaurant. Alex, you're the manager. Just give us a quick introduction and tell us about the beer program that you guys have over there.
So dining room manager at the Nomad, and I had a little bit of a background doing a beer thing down in Tribeca for a couple of years. So when I came in, they wanted to go in a different direction. They asked me to take a look at the beer list. And it was awesome when I inherited it. Kirk Kelloway, who became the general manager of 11 Madison Park, had started it out with Brandon Latavere, one of the other managers there. And they had some really, really awesome stuff in the cellar when I started. And we just needed a little bit more focus and direction. So I started putting something together, and the what we call the reserve list came out of it. So now it's about 110 beers that range from anything like Schneider Aventinus going back to 2006 to newer stuff that I'm really into, Cascade with a couple years on it. We wanted a place that we could have a bunch of beers and age them, as well as have a smaller, more focused cocktail menu where we have stuff like Evil Twin and other more contemporary stuff as well.
That's awesome. So Yeppe from Evil Twin, he hangs out a lot at the Nomad with you, Alex?
Quite a bit.
I'm a regular.
So all the stalkers can go to Nomad and see guys like Yeppe coming in. What other beer guys do you have there on a regular basis?
We have a really good relationship with Garrett Oliver, of course. When we first opened, he did a beer for us that pairs with our most famous dish, the chicken for two. So when we opened, Garrett designed a brown ale. It's called Le Poulet. It's a Belgian brown. Really dark, spicy, and sweet. Perfect for chicken that's stuffed with foie gras, truffles, and brioche. So he's around a lot. And then the guys from Other Half, they did the first class that we did in the series of three. So Sam and Matt are really awesome. They make really great beer. So we're big fans of them as well.
So you have a class that's just for your staff.
Yeah, so Maggie actually came to me with an idea to to do a series of three classes based on work that she's been doing regarding local sustainable beer and how it's made and how it affects our local food scene. So we started out, the first one we did was with Other Half, where they came in and they discussed what they're doing, and the Farm Brewery Act as well, and how that opened up a lot of things for small brewers. And then the second one was at the Ebbe, and the guys from Two Roads, John from Two Roads, came in and talked a little bit about what they're doing. It was a nice little segue because Hipster Ale's brewed at Two Roads as well. And then we're finishing up on October 13th with Garrett. We're going to taste the chicken, taste Le Poulet, and hear the story of the beginning.
I think I might go to that one.
You should come to that one. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Free tig.
Yeah.
I'm coming.
Well, with Yeppe, so yeah, I think there's a kind of a theme on today's show about restaurants and beer because, you know, you what do you like about the Nomad? Because you have some news to tell us too, but tell us how a restaurant like the Nomad inspires you as a beer guy.
I mean, the first time I went to Nomad, I didn't go as a beer guy. I just went to try it out, and I'm a big, you know, I'm into food a lot, and I just went, and I love what they do, and I'm into cocktails a lot too, and Nomad has maybe the best cocktail program in the whole city. So, you know, it was just, you know, I just went in and had dinner and loved it, and heard that they started to take my beers in on the menu, and you know, Alex got hired and we started talking, and all of a sudden he was like, maybe we should make a beer together just for Nomad, and I was, you know, all about it, because When I work with people, it has to be a mutual respect. So if someone like Alex comes in and say, "Hey, you want to do something for Nomad?" and I absolutely love the place already, I mean, it's pretty easy for me to be convinced that's a good idea. So,
all right. And then Bill Kowaleski, I guess Jeffy's new world, but you know, new brewer, mm-hmm. but not really. But you seem like the, you know, veteran in the room.
Well, I'm sitting Victory. Back. Yeah, I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing here because. There's a lot of inspiration for someone who's been operating a restaurant for nearly 19 years. And, of course, our restaurant is sort of out in the country, so to speak, between Philadelphia and Lancaster. But anyone in the restaurant business knows the types of products that come from that area. The Lancaster Valley and Lancaster County are well known for the wonderful products that they provide. So I'm totally enjoying this conversation, and I think that... the food culture that's occurring here in New York, being driven by beer to some extent, is really inspirational.
So, Yappy, you opened up Torst and Luxus. What was the inspiration for that?
The inspiration was actually we wanted to do a beer bar, and that was pretty much it. I didn't have any desire to do a restaurant, mainly because beer is what I do, and I'm not a cook, so I didn't know, you know, how to open a restaurant, and I'd like to do what I'm good at. Then I met Daniel Burns, Canadian chef who lives in New York. He was working at Momofuku at the time. And he was had worked at Momofuku and was in between jobs, and we became good friends, and we started doing like pop-up dinners together. And we found a space that had a full kitchen out in Greenpoint. And I was like, we get a full kitchen for free. We should do something with this kitchen. So I asked him if he was into opening a restaurant. But I told him one thing. The only thing I ask for you from you is that we don't do anything but beer with the food. I mean, no wine, no alcohol, no nothing. So to have a chef at his level to agree with that is not easy. But he did, and you know, now.
What's the big news?
It's actually, I got the news like a couple of hours ago that we got our first Michelin star, and it's quite a big deal because, I mean, first of all, me coming from Denmark, Michelin in Europe is extremely big. It pretty much controls what's good and what's not good in Europe, and the fact that we are actually the first restaurant in the world to get a star that only serves beer. You know, it's a little bit of history writing. I mean, we wanted to show with our place that beer is a good match with food. And we want to show that you can actually go all the way with only beer. And I think we have showed that a little more today. So I'm very excited about it.
Congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Radio is kind of weird. You can't scream for joy, you know? Awesome news.
Well, Bill, you know, what are you doing tonight? I'm just trying to, like, get a sense of you know, there's Luxus and Torst, there's the Nomad, but where are you going to be going tonight?
Quite honestly, I'm in the hands of RJ, my very, very capable sales manager here in the metro area. It's been a busy time for us. I think that everyone in this room knows what a busy schedule is like, and when I come up here, I often just throw myself into the mix and let him figure out where we're going to go, so... wide open
so
for this evening.
So what are the places that you're going to take, Bill, when
for
you come
sure.
here
stalking.
From Pennsylvania? Yeah.
I mean, we're here in Bushwick, which is sort of, you know, the seat of a lot of interesting food, things going on with food, drink. So from here, really within walking distance, there's any number of great places we could go. I think we might start off new place right down the block called Forest Point. Opened up, a few guys from the city opened that up, I guess, 2 weeks ago. We might go over to Montana's, a little bit further into Bushwick later.
Jefferson Stop, right?
Yeah, I think the Jefferson Stop. Pine Box right around the corner. Great place to get a beer as well. So
come on, Jimmy. You know you're making it tough for a guy that's in beer sales.
I know. Where do you get a beer? Yeah, no shortage of spots in the immediate vicinity, for sure.
No, it's fun. It's fun having Bill out here. And I know that... We invite you on the show, and then you're going to do a special event at Blind Tiger tomorrow night, too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the Blind Tiger events are really sort of special for us because it attracts such a great crowd. I see a lot of faces that I don't see at other events in New York, so it kind of is almost like a homecoming in a weird way. We get, you know, a crowd that shows up almost at certain times. There's certain expectations for it. I would encourage more people to come out. I don't know if we can fit you. But everyone's welcome, and yeah, it's going to be a pretty complete and awesome lineup there tomorrow night at the Blind Tiger for us.
All right. Well, tell us about how you got started. I think this is the first time on the show. And
Well, my start almost dates back to 1973, if you break it down. I met my business partner, co-founder, co-brewmaster Ron Barchet, on a school bus about this time of year in 1973. And we began, after playing ice hockey and beating each other up and doing all that fun stuff that normally happens, after college we started homebrewing. My dad was from the coal country of Pennsylvania, so he was a super resourceful guy, gardener, canner, pickler, homebrewer, which probably was doing before it was technically legal. But at any rate, I adopted his kit in 1985 as a out-of-work artist. Bachelor of Fine Arts degree wasn't doing too much for me. So at any rate, I adopted that. And I passed it along to Ron as well, and we just began challenging one another. He first got professional in 1989, joining the Baltimore Brewing Company as Theo de Groen, a German-trained Dutch brewmaster's first apprentice, and then I followed in those shoes. We did Weihenstephan and Domins, respectively, and then after some strong Belgian beers and New Year's Eve of 93-94, we convinced our wives to let us write a business plan and try and break out on our own.
All right, man. And then the first beers you made.
First beers
I know you had the Hop Double, mm-hmm. the IPA.
Yeah, I mean, 1996 was kind of a weird time. There wasn't a whole lot of history to place your faith in. So we opened up with a lineup of two lagers and one ale. We figured that we were playing it safe, but we were also playing it the way that we enjoyed it with the lagers. We had a Dortmunder-style lager called Brandywine Valley Lager, which has now morphed into our Helles Victory Lager. And we had Victory Fest beer, which is a Märzen style that we still continually brew. And then we had the wild card. We had an American whole flower hopped IPA built out of German malt, which we thought no one would enjoy but us. And surprisingly, Hop Devil became our largest seller.
Wow. Have you had Victory before, Alex?
Actually, we opened with Prim Pils as our main line and probably ran it for almost two whole years before I ended up swapping it out. It was difficult for me to change, but we just needed a change at the time. But I had Victory for quite a few years and ran it for a while in different forms as well.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, I'm always amazed at the range of beers you have, because you have like these crazy IPAs, Hop mm-hmm. Double, the Ranch series. Then you're also making like these beautiful German beers, like the Braumeister Pils, that series. I'm always asking for the Dunkel Lager.
The
Schwartz Pils. You guys sneak it in there.
Yeah, well, it's only you and me and Ron and like a few other people, Jimmy. So we'll keep making it though. You know, the interesting thing, and I touched on it earlier about being sort of out in the country brewing our beers, is I often like to joke, if you came to Downingtown, you would understand why we make so many different beers. It's like you have to brew your own fun out there. So, we needed to make everything that would entertain us. And fortunately, it's entertained a lot of other people, too.
All right.
I'm looking up. When I started now, like, I was into raid beer a long time ago when I started becoming a beer geek. And my fourth highest rating of all ratings I've done, and I think I did like 2,500 ratings in total. It's actually Victory Old Horizontal. And I'm just looking it up now. It's kind of funny now that I have the man right next to me saying nothing less than outstanding and definitely one of the best beers I've ever had, if not the best. Pretty good.
A little bit choked up.
I still remember it. I actually rated it more than 10 years ago and I still remember that beer, so it must have done an impact.
Yeah, beer memories are a really amazing thing. I was actually in Costa Rica last week doing a series of three beer dinners involving Costa Rican breweries. And this one young man who works at the Costa Rican craft brewery, I had two bottles left that I could share. And he was talking about how Hop Devil had been his first IPA and he loved it and everything. So I went back to my room, I pulled out the last bottle of that, the last bottle of Prima. And not only was he thrilled, but when he looked at the label, he noticed how we had changed one of the colors in the label. So it's amazing the impressions you can make with beer, right from the image on through the impression.
It's cheers to you guys, man. All right. Hey, talking about just beer and making beer, what about water? You know, you're going back to Yeppe, you're brewing different breweries, and, how does the water affect the styles that you make? Because we were talking yesterday about the hipster ale and how you started that campaign.
I mean, yeah, I do. I brew at a lot of different brewers. And I have this new column at Vice Munches also that I'm writing about my travels around the world. The first one came out last week about Mexico, where I went down a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, going into new systems and new breweries all the time, it's a big challenge. I mean, the malt is pretty much always the same. The hops are pretty much always the same. The yeast we can always get, but the water is always different. And, you know, brewers cheat the water, but but it still infects, you know, how the beer is going to taste. And it's kind of exciting to see, you know, to work with different things. And I've made the same beer in two different countries, and it came out pretty different. And, you know, we use the same ingredients. I know the actual brewing system does a little bit difference also, but definitely the water has a big impact on that thing. So,
what for you, Bill? Because you guys have a new brewery now. You moved down the road.
I mean, we actually tried to minimize the impact of water, of course, while we were trying to build our second brewery. So we're very fortunate at our original brewery in Downingtown because we're on a pristine watershed, and the water only travels 14 miles from the headwaters, the very, you know, source rivulets, down to where we pull it out. And so we need to duplicate that, which really geographically limited a lot of our options in terms of good industrial space, because the next one's an even bigger brewery. So long story short, we were very fortunate to find a facility that was rail-served, spacious enough, on the sister watershed, the west branch of the Brandywine Creek. So geologically and hydrologically, they're identical. So we're getting very, very consistent water from both facilities, which for us was clearly a priority. We didn't want to go through the headache of trying to duplicate water quality.
No, I totally understand that. I wouldn't do it either. I mean, it's only when I go out to different countries. I'm not going to send an email to Mexico and tell them to get me some special water. They'll probably be like, I don't know about that.
Well, I feel like when you brew in different countries, you can almost embrace the water as, like, it's as close to terroir and beer as you're going to get.
Exactly.
It's like and the old Burton-on-Trent kind of thing.
And that's what I like about it. That's also why sometimes I get asked, what do you want to do about the water? I'm like, you know, let's just do what you normally do, because I definitely want to show, you know, I don't want to travel to Mexico and make the exact same beer that I'm making in Connecticut. I mean, why the hell would I go to Mexico to do that? So it's fun for me to go there and see how it comes out.
No, I absolutely agree with those philosophies. The water can be the terroir. So yeah. That is the admirable way to go about it.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
A chicharrón.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Rodder in Bushwick, Brooklyn, the Morgan stop on the L. Afterwards, we're probably going out to the Jeff stop and checking out some bars with Bill Kovaleski. But we got great lineup here. Yappe from Evil Twin, Alex from The Nomad, and Bill from Victory. Great little. I'm still kind of shaking with these huge pillars of the industry in my room with me today. It is great. I mean, first, Yappe, you know, we love having you. And Alex, I met you recently and saw what you've been doing at The Nomad. But with Bill, really, when we have, you're almost a pioneer of craft beer. I know in you know, Steve Hindy's book, he was talking about you as that middle generation.
Yeah, no, that's you know, everyone hands you opportunity wherever you're born into the whole cycle of things, and there's some really substantial breweries that put us on the map. You know, I was drinking a Stout's Pils outside here at the bar, and Carolyn Ed Stout. You know, they kick things off in Pennsylvania, so there's always people you admire and you follow. But hopefully you're inspired enough to do your own thing and add to the party rather than subtract. and we feel we've had that role.
Great. And you brought some beers for us. Before we had the No Matter pills from Evil Twin. And sorry, I had a lot of beer last night. Guess what I drank last night? I drank the single cut half stack for like 6 hours.
One glass.
That's the thing. Now we have so many new great breweries, and it's like there's the dueling best IPA in New York. You know, that's something going on. But this is what's this? This is your Dirt Wolf Double IPA.
Yeah, we brought up some Dirt Wolf. It's actually not even a full year old. It was rolled out in October of last year. And much to some of our fans' chagrin, it actually killed off one of our flagship beers, the Hop Wallop. And to those people, you know, I explained that what we had available to us in hops and technology in 2003 is completely different than what we had available to us in 2013. So we went with the flow, and we embraced what Mother Nature was giving us, and we created a different double IPA that was more aligned.
So what's changed?
The hops. We've got a whole lot of Mosaic, Simcoe, Chinook in here. The Mosaic is sort of the biggest player and the most unique of the varieties. We just picked up a trailer full of wet hops 2 weeks ago, which we threw into our harvest ale, and it was really cool because the folks at Roy Farm said, this is the most Mosaic we've ever seen loaded into a truck. So
it's pretty awesome. Yeah, but what for some of your flagship beers, like the some specialty IPAs you make and the Hipster, what hops are you using for those?
I mean, our IPA, that is our IPA is Falco, and it's actually based on a hop blend called Falconer's Flight, so that's why it got its name Falco also. It's a hop blend that was created to kind of imitate some of the hops that, you know, there's a big hop shortage now because all the breweries use the same hops. Everybody wants Simcoe, everybody wants, you know, Mosaic or Nelson Soang, and to imitate something like that, they blended, I think it's 3 or 4 different hops. And it's a cool hop blend, and I kind of liked it. And I wanted to make a beer just of hop blends, so I took that new approach to it and made a beer from that. So Falco is based on Falconer's Flight. Simcoe is actually a fun beer because... no, not Simcoe. Hipster is a fun beer because when I made Hipster, the whole idea was also to meet that hop shortage, and Hipster is a beer where I change the hops. If we run out, we just change it, and we don't. It's the same beer, it's the same label and everything, but it's kind of the whole idea of the beer that we can actually change the hops without, you know, feeling bad about it.
It's like a field blend.
It is. You know, hipsters drink it anyway, so
as long as it's in a can.
Exactly.
Well, I also admire that whole concept of sustainability, because you're accessing the hops that are readily available rather than driving the industry in a place where it doesn't want to go.
Yeah, and for my brand, it's been a problem to, you know, we're only 4 years old, and we've been growing like crazy the last 4 years. We've been more than doubling our production, and I haven't had a hop contract that was big enough. You know, I couldn't predict what was going to happen next year. I didn't know that I was going to triple the production next year, so I made a hop contract kind of feeling it out and find out that I had way too little. So, you know, I just have to roll with it, and you know, if I don't have the hops, I can't make them up. It's not like I can make Falco, you know, I can't get Falconer's Flight if I can't get it. So I just have to figure that out on the way, and I have to change recipes from time to time because of that. I can't really plan what's happening, and next year is probably gonna be even more.
Yeah, there must be more and more demand for hops.
There is big demand for hops for sure.
Yeah, but I think fortunately, after the market correction of 2007, when we really hit rock bottom and people were literally, you know, being turned away from their hop contracts, we've really basically corrected the marketplace so that hop growers are at least getting a fair price, so they're encouraged to put in more vines. Prior to that, they were tearing out vines and they were putting in orchards and putting in new homes. So, you know, it takes a certain price for people to want to be a hop farmer.
Yeah, I mean, I had made my hop contract last year for 14 and 15, and a month ago, I wanted to look at 16 also, and I asked for the price sheet from our hop supplier, and a hop like Nelson Soang is sold out until 2020. I was like, what? That's like 6 years. So that makes it difficult to plan ahead. You know, you really have to know what you want to do in 6 years.
It's nice that you snuck the Femme Fatale Blanc in there before you ran out of...
Oh, totally. I have that contracted this year, so...
It's delicious.
Well, how, on your end, Alex, with the restaurant, I mean, What are the demands of people? Do they expect to have the same beer all the time? Do they expect to have a really hoppy beer?
I think it depends on what kind of place you are. And since we're in a hotel, we're getting a little bit different clientele than you would at a smaller restaurant or something even in Brooklyn. A hotel with a lot of visibility in New York City, in Manhattan, I get a lot of people who don't want to look at a menu. So we're selling a lot of Pilsner. We're selling a lot of IPA. And you have to be careful about what you have on your main lines, on your draft. So, you know, I'll always keep a innocuous Pilsner on draft.
What do you have on
the right now? It's a Firestone Pivo. So it's basically as great as it can get and make me happy and something that I want to drink.
I love that beer.
Awesome.
It's so good. And at the same time, not disappoint anyone who's going to come in and who says, hey, I don't want to think. I just want to order a light beer. So that it's sort of like walking the line of making our guests happy and also teaching them something about it. Our IPA on draft is Founders All Day. You know, it's another innocuous but still absolutely drinkable, totally delicious beer. And then once I satisfy that core need of, oh, I want an IPA, oh, I want a Pilsner, I can sort of get outside and do something that's going to be make me a little bit more happy, but also expand these people's eyes the way they're looking at craft beer. So right now we have Femme Vitale Yuzu on draft as well, and Finback Fort Childeness, the white IPA that I was drinking all summer.
That's great. So tell us about the No Matter Weiss beer. How did that collaboration come about?
Well, so like I said before, I was sort of hired into this really awesome beer program as it was already, and the guy who was in charge of it before me, Brandon Lattervier, had talked to Yeppe about doing a beer together, and that was how the No Matter Wit came about. It was a 22-ounce bottle, Belgian-style wit beer. It was fully 100% Brett fermented.
Not 100%.
Not 100%.
We fermented with Brett, yeah.
Delicious. You know, and it was in a bomber, so that sort of, not everyone's going to order it, and I thought that sort of was restrictive a little bit. So when we were coming up with the next one last summer, we started talking about it, and I was really into the Westbrook Goza at the time, as was everyone probably. Absolutely delicious. So we thought about it, and, you know, I came to Yeppe and said, hey, can we do something in a can, maybe a Berliner Weiss? And, you know, we just happen to have a very similar taste in beer, I think. So we went with it, and it was awesome, although we did run into some difficulties doing a canned beer at first, right?
I mean, yeah, Alex asked me if I, you know, if we can do the beer and if we can do it in cans. I was like, we can, but you have to buy about 100,000 cans. And I know Nomad enough to know that that might be a little too much. But we, you know, we came up with this idea of calling Nomad Weiss, so we could also sell it. We didn't call it Nomad Weiss, we called it Nomada. So it's like it was a play on the Nomad thing. And, you know, we distribute it in the whole country now. I just love the idea of doing a Berliner Weiss in cans. I like cans and I like Berliner Weisses, and it's just an easy drinkable beer. And Alex also introduced me to the idea of you know, traditionally in Berlin, you serve it with syrups to sweeten it, which is, it's not something I really approve of. I don't really like it that way. But if you can make some, I mean, Alex told me they would make some really, like, good inmade craft syrups that people could do their own blends at the table, and I thought that was an awesome idea. So we're doing that now. Nomad is doing that now.
It was pretty cool. So if you come to the Nomad, a lot of our food items and snacks are served on wood boards. That's made by a woodworking company in New Jersey. So we had this idea to make a custom wood tray. And in the middle, it would have an inlay for the can, so the can would sit right in the middle, and then two little glass decanters on each side of the can as well. And so on the right side, just like in Germany, it's traditional raspberry syrup. On the left side, we do a basil fennel syrup as well, and then we have a dill syrup that we could throw in there also. But super cool. You have traditional, where it's traditionally raspberry and traditionally herbal. And it's just been really awesome. And what I think it does is it opens up the beer to someone who might not want to order a sour beer. You know, the people that we're selling it to, it's like, oh, it's a Nomad House beer. Okay, what? And it starts a conversation. We can tell them, hey, back in when Berliner Weisses were first made, they were super sour. And to make them more palatable, Germans would add sweet syrup to it. So this is our version of it. And I think what it does is it brings a sour beer of a super traditional style to an audience that would never, ever order a sour beer in a can.
Plus, it's very much in the, you know, I've been eating a Nomad a lot, and the way Nomad serve things is, you know, it's interaction with the customer, interaction with the people that eat there. And to do that with not just the food, but actually bring that to the beer also, when people can actually create their own beer. You know, you get this one can that you can taste first, and it's sour, and it's light, and it's, you know, then you can add one syrup, another syrup, and then you can, like, create your own beer at the table. It's very exciting for people.
It's kind of funny. When you came in with Mads from Acme, he looked at the thing and looked at me and goes, why would I want to put syrup in my beer?
Exactly.
And it's fun because, you know, you can put the syrup, but you don't have to, and it's just, it's an option, and it makes it more dynamic.
That's awesome. Well, then we had the Nomad of Ice from Evil Twin, and Bill, you just poured the Wild Devil. So
yeah, the Wild Devil is circulating right now, and I think it's going to be a great foil after the really incredible, refreshing qualities of the Nomad of Ice. The tartness of the Nomad just cuts right through and leaves your palate ready for something different, I suppose. Different would definitely be the story behind the Wild Devil, because this is up until fermentation, it goes completely through the brew house as Hop Devil. So the recipe, water, malted barley, hops, is all identical to Hop Devil, except for in primary fermentation, we use a strain of Brettanomyces that we isolated that is not a very tart producer, doesn't produce a whole lot of lactic acid. And then we finish it in secondary condition with a slightly more tart Brettanomyces. So if you're familiar with Hop Devil, you could drink this beer and think it was from a different planet. But it really, for us, it illustrates the incredible impact of one constituent, the yeast. And dryness, more like fresh-cut cherry wood, very tannic quality to it.
What do you think about this, Yeppe?
I like it. I'm a big fan of Brett beers. The two that I brought, these two other ones, are both made with Brett. You know, yeast is a very interesting creature, and as Bill says, it's definitely, you can take one beer that has the same malt, same hops, same water. If you change the yeast, I mean, it's a different beast. You know, it's a total different beer. You wouldn't even know that it was the same thing. It's very interesting.
One of the nice things about beer, and
you know, I could tell Alex wanted to say something.
He started
it's
moving
the body
fast.
Language. I'm fidgety. One of the cool things, and it's funny because my approach to beer is from a drinking side and not from a creating it side, so I have some weird opinions about it. But the one thing that I love about yeast, and that when each brewer develops their own strain, it's like, even in a collaboration, you can almost taste from the yeast whose brew house they used. When I was out in California, I tasted a collaboration between Three Floyds and Firestone, and you could sense that Three Floyds had something to do with it, but very much Firestone yeast. And the same thing goes the other way. Three Floyds is such a distinct yeast profile, and you guys have a very distinct yeast profile, so it's pretty cool that you can sort of sense that.
It's funny how you dial it down to yeast, because it's really larger than that. It's the synergy of the fermentation, the tanks themselves. We actually have 45 different yeast strains, which is sort of goes back to that whole concept of making your own fun in Downingtown. We wanted to have a broad range of options that we could apply to any different style that we wanted to produce. So the fact that we have two Bretts in here, one that actually is a little bit more sour than the other, and we reserve that for the secondary conditioning, is really sort of the, you know, taking the elements you have and designing a beer, but somehow for the consumer like yourself, Alex, there's still this like memory of like, oh, I kind of know where that came from. That's a good thing.
No, it's great. I love it. RJ, how do you sell Wild Devil? Because you're out there selling to accounts. So how would you describe it to Montana's, the bar we're going to?
You know, Wild Devil, it's, you take something that people are fairly familiar with at this point, a beer that's been around for 18 years, something like Hop Devil, and it's really a great opportunity to show what yeast actually does in a beer. You taste this side by side with Hop Devil, and it's not that they're unrecognizable, but the hops are such a, the interplay between the hops and the malts just in Hop Devil is what that beer is all about. With this, it's fairly neutral yeast in Hop Devil. Bring something like this into play, it totally takes over. So, much to Bill's point,
This is great. This is cherry. A beer that I should have on. I should definitely have the Evil Twin No Matter Vice, and I should have the Victory Wild Devil on my beer list.
Jimmy, I sold you.
I think you just did. So.
Great.
All right. Hey, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Check it out. You can be a member. There's a lot of great shows. A lot of new shows, too. And one of my favorites is Eating Your Words with Kathy Irway. So if you like cookbooks and food, check that out. All right. So here we are. We got Yeppe from Evil Twin, Alex from The Nomad, and Bill and RJ from Victory. We were just talking about we talked about water. We talked about, you know, funky new beers. But Yeppe, what's this beer? I've never had this one either. This is a chance for Jimmy to try all the new beers. That's why we do the show.
Jimmy, it's a funky new beer. it's a beer called Femme Fatale that I made the first time a couple of years ago. We call it an IPA, but it's not really an IPA. So it's 100% Brett fermented IPA, fermented with a strain called Brett C, which is a very fruity strain of Brett. And I made it the first time 2 years ago, and it was just like, you know, a hobby beer with bread, and it came out really good. And I thought it was so good that I wanted to play on it a little bit and do some twists. So we made a black version called Femme Fatale Noir. We made a version with 100% Nelson Sauvage hops, which is a very aromatic hop from New Zealand, called Femme Fatale Blanc. And then, you know, as everyone else, I got obsessed with the Japanese citrus fruit called yuzu. And I just thought the yuzu and the bread would play really well together, so I made a version called Femme Fatale Yuzu. Came out awesome. I loved it. And I went to Japan last December, and I went to the fish market at 4 o'clock in the morning and tried out yuzu, and I tried two new citrus fruits called sudachi and kabozu, and liked them a lot. And I was like, with my whole obsession...
What's sudachi?
Sudachi and kabozu. It's two other Japanese citrus fruits that you only get from Japan. And since I loved yuzu so much, I tasted those two, and they were really good. And I was like, you know, I want to... Let's do some more with the Femme Fatale thing and make a kabozu beer and a sudachi beer. And the one we have right now is the sudachi. So it's a different citrus fruit from Japan. And the other one on the table that we're going to taste in a little bit is kabozu. So it's three different citrus fruits. One of them, like yuzu, is very tart, very sour. One of them is very, like, one of the other ones is more like melony, and one of them is more orangey. So they have different flavors. It's just a fun way to play with different fruits in the same beer.
The restraint and nuance in this beer is absolutely amazing. I mean, like, it hits your nose like it's going to be some kind of crazy cake. There's bread-like qualities to it. And then all of a sudden,
I thought chocolate
citrus,
too. It's like
chocolate.
Crazy.
Yeah, there's elements that, you know, haven't been described in terms of the process that my brain is saying are in here for sure. There's spice and cake qualities to it for the very least. And I think that the restraint of the Brett and the restraint of the citrus are just phenomenal.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, it's a beer that I have had a lot of fun playing around with it, and you know, we've made six or seven different Femme Fatales now, and it has so much going on in terms of the yeast and everything, so it's just a fun way to take something and go with it and see how much you can get out of it, or if you can, you know, get something totally different out of it. I wanted to make a Christmas version also and add, like, I don't know, oranges and spices, or I don't know, something like that, but we never got to it.
This almost tastes like a Christmas version.
It almost does, exactly.
I swear to God, there's chocolate in there.
There's absolutely no chocolate.
Alex, anyways,
I think
go for it.
I think just see my eyes.
He was moving.
One of the cool things about the Femme Fatale series as a whole is that there's so much consistency in regards to the product, and you know, it's we're talking about the cake and the chocolate and all the nuance. It's like that's apparent in all of them, not just these. So what's so beautiful about it is that all of the Femme Fatales have those same nuanced, complex qualities. And then they just have subtle differences where it's Kobosu and Sudachi, and we're running Yuzu on draft right now, and Femme Fatale Noir is incredible, and the Blanc is my favorite because of the just the way that, you know, I don't know if that one's so subtle. It's like the way you harness the Nelson Sauvin hops. It's just like, it's crazy, but it's so great that you have such a continuity between the line, and that's not it's kind of hard to find, I think.
Mm. Thanks.
One thing, jumping back to restaurants and things. So Yuppie at Taurus and Luxus, I always thought it was going to be all like Evil Twin beers, but you actually have quite a range of beers there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an Evil Twin bar, and that was the purpose from the beginning. I like to say that, yeah, I like my own beers, but I like a lot of other people's beers too. And I didn't want to make an Evil Twin bar because for me to be involved in a bar was about making the best bar I could make. And if someone makes a better Pilsner than I do, you know, why the hell would I serve my own? I could just serve someone else's. So I didn't want to put an Evil Twin stamp on it and say, oh, we only believe in ourselves. I've been in the beer industry for a long time. I've loved beer for a longer time. And I want to serve what's best, you know. I just want to bring to the people whatever is best. Again, I like my own beers, but I like a lot of other beers too, so...
And Bill, for you, you guys, in addition to the brewery, now it's two breweries and you're opening a brew pub, yeah. But you've always had a restaurant. What are the beers that you're pouring on draft in your own, you know, brew pubs and restaurants?
Well, I'm sitting here with a fair amount of envy right now because Pennsylvania laws, if you're making your own beers, depending on your licensing, you're only serving your own beers. We can go out and take a restaurant license and serve a wider range, but it really... That was one of our drivers early on in our business model, is we didn't think that we could be, you know, a supplier of beers to other restaurants if we were also serving cocktails and also serving wine and doing exactly everything they were doing on the beverage program. So we constrained our model to only our own beers, and that has caused us to be able to keep this incredible array of beers going, 24 on tap at our flagship Downingtown restaurant at any one given time. So, you know, these different business models, but I'm definitely envious of the concept of being able to have other beers served within my restaurant as well.
Do you serve beers that you only make for the restaurant? Or do you make your beers
We try to play fair. And with the size of our two brew houses, there's very few things that only get served at our brew pub. Typically, we always divvy a few things up and let them go out there into the world and see how they'll do.
All right, man.
Bill, how big is Victory now?
Well, we've got in Downingtown a 50-barrel brew house, and we built a 200-barrel brew house in our second facility. So last year we did 103,000 barrels, if numbers matter.
It does to me.
Well, I guess everybody's growing. You know, we were enamored with all the garage breweries, but now a lot of the breweries that we know, you know, you guys are growing. Brooklyn Brewery's growing, and you too, Yuppie. So
growing like
you're
crazy.
Making beer with Two Roads in Connecticut. Which seems like I feel like they built the brewery for you.
I hope.
Because now you're, like, we talk about my favorite one, the Cowboy, the Smoke Pilsner. I love that beer.
Mm.
Tell us how your beers changed by working with Two Roads.
I mean, Two Roads was, for me, what brought Evil Twin to the next level, because I'm one of those so-called gypsy brewers. I don't own my own brewery yet. And I needed a place to brew. When I was living in Denmark, brewing all over Europe, it was like small batches, and it was expensive, and it was, you know, logistically very difficult to, you know, brew in Scotland, Norway, Holland, all kinds of places, and having to ship them to Denmark and then to the USA and blah, blah, blah. And I heard about Two Roads. I went over, I met the guys, and I actually saw the space before it was even, you know, before they even started building out, and I heard what they were going to do and, you know, the size of the system, and they were taking in customers. And it was kind of, you know, for me, it was like it made Evil Twin. I saw an opportunity for Evil Twin to get to the next level, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, just to put it in perspective, in 11 we made, you know, you said 103,000. In 2011 we made like 1,000 barrels. In 12 we made 2,500 barrels. Last year we made about 7,000, and this year we're going to do about 14,000 barrels. So we're definitely growing fast, you know, and that's mainly because of two roads, and we can get the capacity and we get the good prices, so we can actually get the beers out to customers.
I mean, it does make a difference. Like a lot of these new, like especially like specialty imports, they just, the kegs are so expensive,
and totally.
We have to charge like $10 for a wine glass size, or $12 sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And by you making here in Connecticut, you're actually able to make a competitive like American craft beer price.
Yeah, when I was brewing in Europe, you know, I saw the complaints on the internet all the time. Oh, Evil Twin is overpriced, blah, blah. And I could only say, you know what? I totally agree. It's overpriced. You know, I wish I could make it cheaper, but, you know, people were like, why do we have to pay $16 for a six-pack of hipster ale? And I was like, I don't know. I make 16 cent a can, so don't blame me because I don't run with those $16. So, you know, it's definitely been very good for me to be a two roads and be able to put the beers out at a better price, bigger scale.
You know, what I find so encouraging is the fact that, you know, really intelligent guys at Two Roads built a brewery that will allow your vision to come to light. And we've got guys like Alex in the room that are, you know, building a beer program that's got essentially what you might call an entry-level beer that can take people to, you know, a deeper flavor of beer. So the beer universe right now is incredibly exciting because on both ends of the spectrum, whether it's the raw ingredients, whether it's the production, or whether it's the retail, it's really just keeps opening wider and wider for us brewers to have more fun and do more expressive things.
That's great.
Totally agree.
Before we close, I'm going to just do a quick like wild card question. First with Bill, this I've never asked you this. What beer, if you couldn't get a victory beer, and you were out in a package shop or a liquor store and you were feeling lucky, and you could get a decent beer, what beer would you hope would be in that cooler at a store?
The first one that came to mind that I always find comfort in because it's pretty reliable and it's just got very comfortable flavors is Triple Carmelite.
I like that one too.
Any other reason you just like
any other reason? You hit me with a wild question, and that one's, it's got an amazing sort of orange blossom quality to it. I'm not actually a big Belgian beer guy per se, but that one has got very comforting flavors to it. So if I was stressed out in a bottle shop looking for something I wanted, and I found out, I would be instantly happy.
All right. What about you, Yeppy?
I mean, I get asked the question a lot. So, what is your favorite brewery, and can you have a favorite brewery? I don't know. I always, but you know, since I get asked the question a lot, I kind of have to have an answer, and I always answer Jolly Pumpkin out of Michigan. Jolly Pumpkin to me is it's so unique and so different in the whole approach of making beers. You know, they started barrel aging before barrel aging was even invented. They do 100%. You know, all the beers are with wild yeast or bread, and it's just so unique, and they have such a cool house flavor that's, every time I drink a Jolly Pumpkin, I'm just amazed how good it is. And I actually made a collaboration with Jolly Pumpkin a couple of weeks ago, which, you know, I've been asking Ron for like 5 years if he would do it, and finally he said yes, and it was a big deal for me because I just love everything they do.
Collaborations are kind of like back to high school dating. You just keep asking and asking and asking.
I had Jolly Pumpkin in my head for a long time, and I was like, I need to make this happen.
Everybody gets one date, right?
Exactly.
And Alex, what about for you? Like, you're on a vacation, and you know, you go into that store, and you're like, please let them have
outside
something.
Outside of Evil Twin?
Thank you, Alex. I love you, too.
I've never seen Evil Twin on vacation.
the No Matter Weiss was the summer beer, you know? No, it's, you know, I think that when you're outside of your comfort zone, you're looking for something, you're looking for consistency, whether it be Triple Carmelite, where you know no matter where you are, you get it. I think Allagash, you know, people hate on Allagash White, but the one thing that Rob Todd does right is consistency. You know, it just crushes no matter what, no matter where you get it. It's always going to be that same thing. It's such a beautiful beer.
And you just, Bill started shaking his head like he's excited.
I just sat back and shook my head because I'm a big Rob Todd fan and especially a big Allagash White fan. The consistency of that brewery and also the leading edge of things that they do. So I'm definitely glad you mentioned that one, Alex.
It's just an easy go-to beer, even if you're in a supermarket somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
If I'm in the Jersey Shore, getting a beer, if I see Victory Hop Devil, which I have seen, I'm very happy.
You know? I'm glad to make you happy.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie, right. If you ask me what I have in my fridge right now besides Evil Twin, it's actually Victory Prima Pils.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. On that note, I love Prima Pils, but I love even more the Victory Braumeister series. Tell us about that before we sign off, because it's like you have your great pills, then you have like a special series of pills.
Well, I think Yeppie's going to recognize this. Sometimes when you hit something and you get it right, then you're like boxed in, and all you get to do is that thing. And as much as I love Prima Pils, if you cut my wrist right now, Prima Pils would flow out. But Braumeister Pils, we began in 2001, and it was just an opportunity to very methodically go through all the different hops that we had interest in and do a Prima Pils recipes without the four noble hops, just a single variety of hops. And we've really settled on as Tettnang as our main go-to, but we'll keep developing on that one forever.
That's a good one to look. Because I put it on my list at Jimmy's number 43, I'm like, it's Victory Braumeister Pils. And I always hope that someone knows the difference, because I'm always proud to have that. So
as long as you're happy with it, everyone should be happy.
We're going to give a quick shout out to some special events coming up. Gosh, it's September, it's almost October. Next week, we're producing the Oktoberfest at the Seaport. We've got a lineup of great new local hard-to-get beers like Secret Engine, Bridge and Tunnel, Other Half. And Matt Timms, our favorite MC, is going to lead a People's Choice Bratwurst competition. So check it out, Oktoberfest, on our site, goodbrewseal.com. And Cider Week's coming up, too. We'll look forward to that at the end of October. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com, who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Bill, RJ, Yeppe, and Alex for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.